And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone, to the Hands-On Apologetics. It's Friday. What better day is there to do apologetics, talk about the faith, defending the faith? And it's great to be with you. I'm Gary Matuta, and this is Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, or Catholic Apologetics. It is essentially where the rubber catechesis meets the road of everyday life. It's great to be with you. In fact, hello everybody on watching on live stream and Facebook and YouTube. It's great to see greetings. In fact, I think I saw some emoticons where it was karate emoticons or judo or something like that. All right. Welcome. Friday's a great day. Let me ask you a question. Is there ever a day that's not a good day to dive into apologetics, learning more about Jesus and loving Jesus more? I dare say not. We got a fun broadcast for you. I'm giggling because it's going to be a fun session here in the dojo. We're going to talk about book recommends, must-have books that every Catholic ought to have. I'm going to give you a beginner's level, intermediate level, advanced level, just books that are great to have on your bookshelf because, after all, defending the faith, you have to have weapons. And, of course, there's spiritual weapons that you just heard Jesse talk about several spiritual weapons in spiritual warfare. But there's also intellectual weapons. We got to keep our minds sharp. And the best way to do that is to have good, solid reading material. And since it's the first of the year, early in the year, they usually have these top 100 countdowns and stuff. I figured, I'll just give you the essentials, some of the best books out there. So that's going to be fun. That's going to come up in the last half of the show. We're going to have our usual workout routines. We're going to talk about finding the fallacy. Since it's Friday, we're going to talk about propaganda technique. Propaganda technique is called testimonials, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with, but probably never thought about it. And the Meet the Early Church Father for today is Marius Victorinus. Marius Victorinus. And not a very well-known father, but an interesting one nevertheless. And also, continuing on the show, if you listen to the show on January 2nd broadcast, we went through a video that was on Prager University, and it's called How the Reformation Shaped the World. And we had a blast. I was going through clips and making comments. At least I had a blast. I hope you did too. But unfortunately, I was having so much fun that I ran up to the break and I couldn't continue. So what I want to do today is we're going to continue with those clips and just tear it apart because it's kind of like a trip to yesteryear with all this anti-popery kind of propaganda about how great Luther was in the Protestant Reformation. And I just want to, maybe bring a little bit of clarification to that. Because several people have emailed me about this clip, and I figured, why not? We'll take a look at it. And, of course, if you ever want to join the conversation, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you can always email. I take email questions at the Dojo mailbox. Is at questions@handsonapologetics.com. Questions@handsonapologetics.com. And it doesn't necessarily have to be questions. Perhaps you could just describe a situation that you would maybe like some advice on. For example, maybe you're at work and there's a coworker who is bothering you about your faith or maybe giving you some objections. Or perhaps you have a loved one who left the church, would like some advice about how to bring them back. Things like that. We'd love to have it, and I could keep it anonymous if you'd like, and we could talk about it on the program. So this is kind of your sounding board, so we can not only get my ideas, but also some of the listeners could call in and share what worked for them, what didn't work for them. All right, very good. So this is, we're your lifeline. I'd like to be your lifeline to help you out so that you can share the faith with clarity and charity and confidence, right? All right, so let's move on to our finding the fallacy for today. And the fallacy is, like I said, it's a, not actually a informal fallacy. It's a propaganda technique. It's known as testimonials. Now, we're bombarded with testimonials, especially in advertising. And the reason for it is it's a way in which to persuade people to believe something or do something in a way that's not based on rational demonstration or evidence, right? That's basically what propaganda is. So the testimonials do that same thing. By having testimonials about how great a product works or how much you like it or something like that, that can be extremely persuasive to let people know, basically, you know, to induce them to buy a product. In fact, I know there are several cable TV shows. I don't even know if they're still around, but there was a while there where you could buy things, basically call up and buy things. And the show was basically nothing but testimonials. Now, there's nothing wrong with testimonials, but the thing is that testimonials can be staged, and often the testimonials will be only positive ones, okay? So it's possible for them to suppress the opposite view. For example, it's funny if you ever tune in and watch some of those sales shows that you never have a caller say, yeah, I bought it, I thought it was okay. You know, you never have something like that. It's always some sort of glowing, you know, this is the greatest product ever. And the funny thing is that with testimonials, you know, some things or products or whatever might be a good fit for one person and a bad fit for another. So just FYI. Now, when I say testimonials, what I mean is testimonies to sell a product. Okay, or it could be testimonies to sell a belief system. For example, the Mormons are famous for their personal testimonials on, you know, on the porches. You know, when they knock at your door, they will testify to the truth of Mormonism, which is fine and dandy, you know, but it can't be used in place of evidence, right? And I think what doesn't fit into this category is journeys of faith. For example, that's different from a journey of faith. For example, somebody might describe, you know, their life of faith and how they came to where they are today. That's actually, I think, something legitimate. That's something you can interact with. And there may be evidence that you can glean from that. But if it's just merely, I testify that this is true, unless they're like, it's an eyewitness or something like that, it's kind of flimsy. So that's our finding of the fallacy for today, the propaganda technique of testimonials. All right? And I testify that Hands-On Apologetics is the most interesting apologetics talk show on Catholicism. How about that? All right. And you could take that to the bank, as the old commercials used to say. All right, it's time for Meet the Early Church Fathers, and the Early Church Father for today is Marius Victorinus. Marius Victorinus, who flourished roughly around AD 355. Marius was born in Africa around the year 300. He distinguished himself in the secular state as an orator in Rome. So he was well known for his rhetoric, well known for his speeches. And he converted to Catholicism around the year 355 AD. Jerome remarks that his doctrinal writings are very obscure and can be understood, could be understood only by the learned. He wrote commentaries on the epistles, and they proved, in fact, that, yes, he is pretty obscure, yet, you know, very learned and very interesting writings. We really don't have any other biographical information about him. The date of his death is not known. And, you know, I kind of relate to this guy because, number one, he's obscure, and number two, he writes books that a lot of people can't understand. So, you know, this is a person that I can relate to. So I want to give a couple of clips before we go to our first break. This is from his book, Against Arius, Against the Arian Heresy. And yeah, this will give you a sample about a little bit how obtuse he is in his writings. He says this, quote, "To live then is Christ, and to understand is the Spirit. Therefore the Spirit receives from Christ. Christ himself is from the Father, and in this way the Spirit too is from the Father. All therefore are one and from the Father." That's pretty cool. So he shows the oneness of the Trinity, yet the distinctness in persons. And notice he also speaks about the profession or this procession of the Holy Spirit, what we call the filioque in Latin, that the Holy Spirit proceeds from both the Father and the Son. Another quote from the same work, he says, "The whole man therefore was assumed." He's talking about the incarnation, by the way. "And having been assumed, was also made free. For in him all things were universal, universal flesh and a universal soul. And on the cross, they have been offered and purified through the saving God, the Logos, the universal of all universals, through whom all things were made, who is Jesus Christ, God, our Lord and Savior. Amen." Now, what's beautiful about this quote is he kind of echoes something that St. Athanasius talks about with the incarnation. Namely, that when God became flesh, he assumed our nature. He assumed the totality of our human nature. Why? So that he could redeem the totality of our human nature. In other words, the human nature Christ assumed was sinless. And by being sinless, he's able to redeem us from all types of sin. Right? So, very profound thoughts from Marcius. Now, when we come back on the other side of break, we're going to be talking about that Prager University video and book recommends. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there. Father Wolfgang will be there. And our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And, you know, I want to tell everyone that at the end of the program, I'm going to tell you about the guest that we're going to have next week. Huge week on HOA Live. And so, you know, stay tuned because you don't want to miss the preview for next week. But let's go to this clip. Like I mentioned before, several people have emailed me and said, you got to respond to this clip because it's just off the wall. So I normally don't because it has to do with Luther and Luther's Luther's wrote so much and so many things he contradicts himself and it's a labyrinth. So I generally don't touch Luther with the 10-foot pole just because chances are if you say something about him, somebody will find something and they'll say the opposite. So, but this is different though. He is kind of painting, he's kind of going to back to yesteryear with the no popery history or actually what Herbert Butterfield once called Whig history. Where you know all light and all goodness came from the Protestant Reformation, and Catholicism was darkness, and you know trying to pull us back to the Dark Ages and so on. So I listened to it. By the way, the title of the video is called "How the Reformation Shaped the World" by Stephen Cornels, and it's on www.prageru.com. Just I want to give you know give my proper dues to him. And as we went through, we were having so much fun, we kind of went over time, and I didn't get a chance to finish it. And there's a lot of really, really interesting stuff we could talk about on it. So I figured, let's do it today. Okay, it was Friday. You know, we'll end on a fun note. So first off, the video, let me give you a recap. And by the way, if anybody missed the first show, you could go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Go to shows, and there's the archive of all our shows. Just scroll down to the January 2nd show, and I believe it's in the second segment we went through the first half of this. So if you enjoyed today's show, you know, go back and listen to the first part. But I'll bring you up to speed just in case you missed it. It's basically starts talking about Martin Luther's 95 complaints that he posted on the church door at Wittenberg, which is kind of weird because he didn't post 95 complaints. He posted 95 theses, which he wished to be debated. So these are theses for debate. But the narrator styles it as complaints, which, you know, I think that's part of the overall video is to make Luther seem like he was just trying to have some, you know, some theological discussion and maybe point out some things that were incorrect. And then the big bad church took its collective foot and tried to stomp them out. You know, that's kind of the feeling of this video. So anyway, so he calls it complaints, even though it's a thesis. Although I must say, if you read the 95 theses, you'll find out that probably the last four or five of them are just pot shots at the Holy Father. So, you know, I this is something a little bit more than complaints. And then he says that the Protestant Reformation came from a dispute over indulgences, which he says can be quickly summarized as a get-out-of-hell-free card, which is just incredible distortion. It has nothing to do with hell. It has to do with purgatory, with our purification, the completion of our sanctification, and the temporal punishments due to sin. In fact, in order to gain an indulgence, you have to be in a state of grace. You have to make a good confession and have absolution. And technically, if you died when you stepped foot out of the confessional, you know, you're destined to heaven, you know, if you're in a state of grace. So it was just, that's just a sample of some of the weird distortions in this video. And then he says that, Luther was just trying to kind of have this academic discussion with the church. But the fact of the matter, and the bad church, by the way, you know, went to war with him, which in fact, what happened in history was Rome really didn't care much about Luther's 95 theses. It just looked at it as just a petty squabble between the Augustinians and the Dominicans, and something that it didn't really want to address. In fact, the first official response to the thesis was from a censor in Rome named Sylvester Macaloni, who penned a quick and dismissive rebuttal because he didn't think it was that important. And of course, Luther fired back with his own quick and dismissive and somewhat contentious rebuttal back. The truth of the matter is that Rome really didn't see this as that important. However, due to Luther's persistent attacks and obstinacy and spreading the word and gaining adherence, by the time the church began to officially act, he had already gained the trust of several German princes and a large following. So really, it was almost like too little too late. So it wasn't like Luther just asked a question and he gets slapped on the wrist with a ruler or something like that. I think it was more of Luther wanted a fight. Luther wanted a break. Then the video continues, and to its credit, now we have to give credit where credit is due. The narrator in the video does give a character assessment of Luther, which is, I think, pretty fair. I mean, he was an incredibly bright individual, and he did have character flaws. He was very combative, and he didn't back down, that type of stuff. But then it says, kind of like in the throwaway line, it says, "And sadly, at the end of his life, he became anti-Semitic." You know, as if it's almost like, well, when he became old, he became kind of crotchety and you know, started speaking against the Jews. And that's part of his character defect, right? And there might be a grain of truth there. But what you have to realize, ladies and gentlemen, is when you're talking about Martin Luther, you have to realize that as his career progressed, he really became a kind of apocalyptic end-time preacher. We don't really appreciate that about Luther, but it's there, and Lutheran historians have recognized it too. In fact, some of them say that the reason why Luther didn't develop a theology about the church was because he thought the end of time was going to happen within his lifetime, and there wouldn't be a need for a church, you know? So, I mean, it really does shape his whole worldview. So, he believed he rediscovered the true gospel. He identified the Antichrist, the Pope. He saw the advances of Islamic forces as the final battle of Gog versus Magog. And as far as the Jews were concerned, he believed that since he'd rediscovered the true gospel, that he would preach the Lutheran gospel to the Jews and they would convert en masse. Because after all, this is part of the ancient teaching of the church, is that near the end of time, there would be a mass conversion of Jews. And when this didn't happen, that was when Luther unleashes his anger against the Jews. And that anti-Semitic anger is really part and parcel with his anti-Catholic anger, and, you know, all the other, anyone who opposed him received his wrath. So I guess that is part of his character flaw. But it is, it's also wrapped up with his theology. So we finished the broadcast where the narrator is talking about that really the genius of Martin Luther was he didn't want to separate the Bible from the believer. And we made various comments about that, but he thought that that everybody had a right to read the Bible and make of it whatever they think. And so what I want to do right now is I'm going to play you a clip. It's going to have the last clip we did and also the new clip. And you can kind of, we'll just pick up the narrative from there.
But the consequences of Luther's ideas extended far beyond a religious dispute. It's not an exaggeration to say that as a result of Luther's ideas, the modern individual was born, a free actor, endowed with God-given rights that exist independent of government or any other institution. Each person could find those rights by reading and interpreting the Bible for himself. Of course, to do that, you had to be able to read the Bible, and throughout the first millennium right up until Luther's day, only a very few people could. Books, including the Bible, were all handwritten, a process usually that took months. This made books rare and expensive.
Okay. Did you catch that? I don't know. Hopefully you kind of caught this contradiction there, right? Because he's talking about that Martin Luther wanted to reintroduce the Bible with the laity, you know? Let me play you an earlier clip so you can kind of get a gist of it, what he claims earlier in the video.
Luther believed there should be no separation between the Bible and the believer. Every individual should have access to the Word of God, Luther contended, as any priest did, or even the Pope. We take this view for granted now, but in the 16th century, it was a radical concept.
Okay. So at the beginning of the video, he says, well, Luther wanted to take away the separation of the Bible from the laity so everybody could read the Bible. But then we just heard in the clip there that no one could read. You know, and printed material just wasn't available. So is it really a shock that in the 16th century, you know, this idea of that everybody should have a copy of the Bible and can interpret it for themselves was really non-existent, not because the big bad church was trying to keep the Bible away from people. It was just the Bibles were expensive. There just started to be mass production of printing. That was a relatively new technology. And like he says, most people couldn't read. So it's like, you know, so at one time he's kind of insinuating that the church was deliberately, not insinuating, I think he actually says so, that the church was deliberately trying to keep the Bible out of the hands of the laity, you know, to ensure its power. And yet, on the other hand, he's forced to admit that the Bible just wasn't available for people to have and read and so on and so forth. Okay, it gets worse, ladies and gentlemen. Let me play the next clip.
Furthermore, most Bibles were written in Latin, the language of the church, a language familiar only to the clergy and educated elite. This exclusivity was one of the many ways in which the church maintained its power. Luther answered this problem by translating the Bible into everyday German, so that anyone could read it.
Okay. This, like I said, this is such a, there's just so many like old canards that I thought that were gone. And, you know, it's almost like visiting a museum. Okay. The Bible was available in Latin, and he says that was to keep people from reading it for themselves. What does he expect the Latin speaking West to read? I mean, the language that anyone who could read did read was Latin. It was the most popular language. Just like in the East, you know, the Greek-speaking East, they read the Bible according to Septuagint and the Greek New Testament. They read it in Greek, right? I mean, so it's not some nefarious thing that we translated the Bible into Latin. You know, we translated into the basically the language of literate people. Okay, now they also had their own, you know, their own countries. They had their own vernacular languages, and we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. Stay tuned, everybody.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. All right, that was a pretty mellow intro, wasn't it? We're having fun. We're listening to a clip from Prager University, PragerU.com, called How the Reformation Shaped the World. And we just got done, and the narrator says that the Bible was translated only in Latin, and that was done on purpose in order to maintain authority over people's minds, I suppose you could say. And how Luther undid this. You know, this is the death blow to Catholic power, apparently, is that he translated the Bible into the German language so that everybody could read it, even though he said previously that practically no one could read and, you know, books were pretty rare. So, yeah, I don't know how that all squares together, but let me explain something to you. This is something every Catholic should be able to tell somebody if they ever bring this up. This is an old canard that was kind of, Luther kind of spent it near the end of his life. They never saw a Bible, you know, so on and so forth until, you know, years into seminary, whatever. Okay, there's 104 editions of the Bible in Latin before Luther's Bible, okay? There were 9 editions, Catholic editions, before the birth of Luther in the German language. And there were 27 editions in German before he published his own Bible. Okay, now that's just Germany. Let's go to Italy. Italy, there was more than 40 editions of the Bible before the first Protestant version appeared. So these are all Catholic, 40 Catholic editions in Italian. Okay, let's see. And 25 of these are Italian language before 1500 and with the express permission of Rome. Okay, in France, there were 18 editions before 1547, the first appearing in 1478. In Spain, they began publishing editions of the Bible and in Spanish, I believe, with the full consent of the Spanish Inquisition. In Hungary, by the year 1456, in Bohemia in 1478, in Flanders before 1500, you know, these Bibles were being translated not only in Latin, but also in the vernacular. So overall, 626 editions of the Bible were printed and established. And of those, 198 editions were in the language of the laity. Right? It was pouring off the press with complete sanction from Rome. You know, it's completely Catholic. Catholic Bibles were pouring off the press long before the first Protestant version of Scripture ever came into the world. So, you know, far from Martin Luther being David slinging the stones at Goliath, you know, and the stones being this vernacular translation, we've been there and done that for quite a while. So this whole thing about, you know, Latin being used to, you know, imprison the minds of the laity and stuff like that, that's just pure poppycock. But let's continue.
But his efforts would all have been for naught except for the recent invention of the printing press by a fellow German, Johannes Gutenberg. The printing press allowed for the first time in history books and soon thereafter pamphlets and newspapers to be widely distributed.
Okay, well, I would grant that I think Gutenberg actually contributed more to modernity than anything else. I mean, just the production of the mass production of printing material certainly, you know, went a long way. But notice, you know, Gutenberg was a Catholic, and the first Bible to come off his press was a Catholic Bible, no less in Latin. Okay. So, you know, Gutenberg is, you know, this is like something that I think it's true. Without the mass printing, Luther probably wouldn't have had as much of an outreach as he did in history, you know, if Gutenberg wasn't there. But, you know, it's this whole, you know, canard about the church keeping the Bible from the laity, like I said, it's just old no popery history. So let's continue.
Bloody religious wars between Catholic and Protestant forces quickly followed on the heels of Luther's new ideas. They lasted for 200 years and cost countless lives. The 30 Years' War alone from 1618 to 1648 is reputed to have led to about 8 million deaths from fighting, famine, and disease.
Okay, so, you know, and this is where no popery history slowly starts beginning to fold into Whig history that we mentioned earlier. There's lots of problems with this, that, you know, Martin Luther started this individualism, and then religious wars broke out. But the fact of the matter is that governments in Europe at that time were state church governments. In other words, there was a political component, and there was also ecclesiastical component. But they're separate, but they work together. So what happened when Lutheranism came on the scene was Luther didn't establish, like, independent modern nations. He established independent church states. And so you really have what's really the breaking up of European unity, it wasn't perfect unity at that point, and the birth of nationalism in Europe, which causes a massive bloodshedding. And it should also be noted that the 30 Years' War wasn't entirely a religious thing. It wasn't really Catholics versus Protestants. Maybe at the outset it was, but it quickly de-evolved into an ongoing conflict between France and the Habsburgs, who are vying for political dominance. So it's probably unfair for him to characterize the 30 Years' War as just being this exclusive war between Catholics and Protestants. Let's continue.
But out of all this carnage, many positive changes came too. The Protestant empowerment of the individual led to capitalism and the Enlightenment, just to name two byproducts of Luther's protest.
Okay, so the byproducts of Luther's protest, and he counts this as positive developments, is the Enlightenment. Okay, he juxtaposes it against the 30 Years' War. So all this religious violence and everything was really bad, but what came out of it that was good was this peaceful Enlightenment. That, the birth of science and all this other good things that came out of it. I don't know how anybody could say that with a straight face, given the fact that, you know, the French Enlightenment kind of started with the French Revolution. And the French Revolution was not a peaceful affair. I mean, tens of thousands of innocent people were killed. As many as 300,000 Frenchmen and women were arrested in a 10-month period between September 1793 in July 1794. It was an incredibly bloody affair where priests and nuns and religious and laity were put to death along with, atheists and deists. I mean, it was a bloodbath. And also the other thing too, and this is what we'll see also in the last clip as well, is that what Enlightenment brought together was kind of an amnesia about all the things that it built upon. It, like, ignored the Catholic past completely. And that's kind of what this narrative does. It's not true that it was all darkness and superstition before the Enlightenment, or even before the Protestant Reformation. You know, most people say the Enlightenment was good because it was modern science, but they can only say that because, for some reason, the people who buy into the Enlightenment had forgotten the Catholic past, about all the contributions that the Catholic faith and Catholic individuals, including bishops and priests, contributed towards the building of modern science. So it isn't like it just kind of came out of nowhere because of Martin Luther's, Martin Luther revolted, the Enlightenment happened, then modern science came about. Modern science was already underway, long before that. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the last clip. And then we'll finish this segment.
The American Revolution, with its idea that individuals endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights should be free to form their own government, was another. Of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, all but one was a Protestant.
Okay. So it kind of ends with that little bang, like, see, and then at the end of this, bingo, you have America, right? So, oh boy, where do I start with this? First, you know, modern rights didn't just pop out of nowhere after the Reformation. Again, you know, it's this this ignorance about the Catholic patrimony that precedes the Reformation and the Enlightenment. In fact, this whole idea about human beings as human beings having inviolable rights given to them by God happened actually way back when the Spanish discovered the New World. I mean, it was part of this development of theological reflection upon, you know, what kind of rules ought to be done to protect the indigenous people of the Americas. In fact, it's Father Francisco de Victoria in the University of Salamanca who did a series of lectures in which he proposed that the rights of non-Christians, right, in terms of property and life, are, in a sense, inviolable, so that the Spanish government couldn't go to the Americas and dispossess the indigenous occupants there of their property. And they couldn't just willy-nilly kill them. Why? Because they're made in the image and likeness of God. This is way before Martin Luther. Way before, right? Now, what about the Declaration of Independence, that little last line, you know, and they're all signed by Protestants except for one. Okay, what do we make of that? Well, you know, the 13 colonies was made up almost exclusively of Protestant groups that were kicked out of another Protestant country, namely England, right? And so it's not a surprise that Catholics in the New World were a minority, and the persecuted minority, by the way. You know, they were not only a minority, but persecuted minority who escaped the persecution in Protestant England only to come here to live more or less with the other colonies. And that one person that was not Protestant that signed the Declaration of Independence was a Catholic. So let me ask you this. If the whole American endeavor is counter to the Catholic faith, how in the world could a Catholic sign off on it, right? That should be your first clue that maybe we're not really looking at this whole thing the right way. So, you know, this is up there. It's on PragerU.com. Check it out. But if it was on MachutaU or if it was in the dojo, if this was a paper submitted by you, the listener, I'm sorry, but I have to give you enough. And a big fat up about that. All right, gang, stay tuned. We're going to talk about book recommends, books that you need to have on your bookshelf.
Hello, this is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th. At the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Meeting the YouTube feed, and apparently a lot of people concur with my grade on that video. Okay, guys, listen up. Let's talk about books. There's a lot of great books, and for beginners, I would like to recommend some books that really should be on every Catholic apologist bookshelf, if it isn't already there. Now, I'm not going to rank this in terms of the best or the worst, and I'm not. And this is mostly just general stuff. So I maybe one day I could do the best books on Mary or the best books on Mass or best books on Purgatory or Justification or something. We could do specialized ones. But this is general stuff that everybody should have, okay? Okay, first one. Everyone should have a copy of it's called Theology for Beginners by Frank Sheed. Frank Sheed is a English Catholic apologist. He lived in, he flourished really around the 40s and 50s. And he honed the craft of going to Hyde Park and giving presentations on the Catholic faith and dealing with hecklers. So he learned how to say things very clearly and succinctly, and to anticipate objections. In the book Theology for Beginners, it's kind of an introduction to theology. So if you're not really familiar with it, this is a great book to jump into because he explains things very clearly and simply. And, I sold tons and tons of this book back when I ran my own nonprofit ministry. And I highly recommend that, Theology for Beginners. In fact, you know what? I'm going to have to talk to the folks at Virgin Most Powerful. Somehow we'll get this list up there. So I don't want people jotting this down while you're driving or something like that. Theology for Beginners. Another book which has to be on every Catholic apologist bookshelf for beginners is Catholicism Fundamentalism by Carl Keating. In fact, we just interviewed Carl a little while ago. This book is what started me in apologetics back in late 80s, early 90s. It's a great book. Carl walks you through some of the older anti-Catholic ministries, and he also debunks a lot of those old canards. Actually, some of them that we just went over in that video is still around. So some parts of Catholicism Fundamentalism maybe is a little antiquated, but nevertheless, he does a great job with establishing, defending certain doctrines. And then the last part of the book, he gives his own recommendations about starting an apologetic. So for the beginner, Catholicism Fundamentalism, if it isn't on your shelf already, you should pick it up. Another book I would recommend is The Case for Catholicism by Trent Horn. You've heard Trent here in the dojo also. It's kind of like he goes over both old and new objections to the Catholic faith overall. So he goes over objections in terms of salvation by faith and salvation by faith alone, the Mass, the Bible, Mary, all that good stuff. And he does, Trent's an awesome writer and a speaker, and he does a fine job because it's really easy to get into the weeds and go into minutia, but he doesn't. He sticks to the biggies. So if you have a case for Catholicism, you're pretty well armed as far as Catholic Protestant issues. Another book, and I debated whether this should be on a beginner's bookshelf, but I think it's still helpful. It's called Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma by Ludwig Ott. It's available in English. And basically what it is an outline of Catholic theology. And so what he'll do is he'll give a doctrine, then the next subset, it'll be a particular part of that doctrine. He'll tell you where it is in terms of its authoritative teaching. We just talked with Jimmy Akin about teaching with authority. well, it'll give you the theological notes, like whether it's de fide of the faith or is it theological opinion. Then underneath, he will talk about those who opposed it. Then he'll give scripture, the scriptural basis for it, and he'll give early church father quotes. They're not very full. It's an outline, okay? But it's very helpful. Very helpful book. It's an older book, but it's still available in print. So, Theology for Beginners, Catholicism, Fundamentalism, Case for the Catholicism, Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. Since I mentioned Jimmy Akin, I also recommend beginners to pick up Teaching with Authority, his book that we talked about yesterday, because that is so helpful. It explains all the different offices, teachings offices in the church, what's a dogma, what's a doctrine, and he gives really good examples throughout the book of, well, what about this and what about that? Is that official Catholic teaching? He kind of lays that down. Next. For all those dealing with no popery history that seems like it just won't die, okay, like we just went through, there's an excellent book by another guy who I've had in the, it's funny, most of these people I've had in the dojo. Stephen Weidenkopf wrote a book. It's called The Real Story of Catholic History. It's a fantastic book, and he goes through all these historical canards that's been circulating literally for a couple centuries. And people all think it's true, but they're actually either wrong or slightly true. Or, you know, he goes through it, and he covers so much material just in one or two pages. It's really an awesome primer for anyone who wants to defend the faith. It's The Real Story of Catholic History. And Stephen's a really good historian. He writes succinctly and clearly. And this book, is, I think, would be invaluable for the beginner. Another recommend is Carlo Brissard's Prepare the Way. You know, as I've been having Carlo, he's kind of a regular here at Hands on Apologetics. We've been going through some of the things in his book. And as you can tell, it's awesome. He deals with relativism. Does God exist? All sorts of things that not are just Catholic Protestant issues, but also faith issues, like people with atheists or agnostics and things like that. Carlos, trust me, he's as good of a writer as he is a speaker, which says a lot about him. Okay, so I recommend that. Another book is by a good friend of mine, and that is by David Armstrong. And Dave Armstrong wrote One Minute Apologist. Now, I can't remember who the publisher is. It's been out for a little while. But this is awesome because he takes some of the most commonly objected things against Catholicism from Protestantism, and he gives a nice, succinct briefing on it. He gives you scripture. He gives you early church fathers. And he gives his own defense of it. It's an awesome book. Awesome book. I was just, keeping my eye on the dojo thing. Oh, by I'll mention later. Yeah, I'm going to bring my books to the conference, but some of these books, I won't because I didn't write them. So I can only carry so many books. There's also this, The Faith of the Early Fathers by Jurgens. It's a 3-volume set by Liturgical Press. And by the way, I use that a lot for my Meet the Early Church Fathers segments. So if you enjoy that part of the program, you can have that in print or even on Kindle. I'm not sure if it is on Kindle, but that'd be kind of cool. And you can have all the quotes from the fathers and the biographical material, and it's all right there. So Jurgens, Faith of the Early Fathers. Very, very good book. I think every beginning apologist ought to have that book just for starters. Okay. Dangers to the Faith. By my good buddy El Cresta. In fact, I'm going to be hosting. Yes, I'm stepping in as a substitute host for him today on Cresta in the afternoon. He wrote an awesome book that hasn't gotten very much publicity, but it's called Dangers to the Faith. And I'm not just saying that because he's a longtime friend. El did a fantastic job where he deals with issues that most Catholic apologetics books don't. I don't want to give too much of it away, but he deals with consumerism. He deals with issues like transhumanism, things that are on the radar screen that they might not seem really big now, but they will be in the near future. And, of course, L has, he's one of the smartest people I know, just in the volume of knowledge that he can recall instantly. He deals with it succinctly, and he knows where to go and how to get the proverbial pin and pop the balloon. So it's actually a fun read. It's a quick read, but it covers a lot of the areas that most Catholic apologetic books don't. That's Dangers to the Faith by L. Cresta. My last book is an older book, and this is just for our beginners. Maybe another program I'll do for the intermediate and advanced. But this is an older book, and it's by a wonderful priest who passed away. You know, God bless his soul. His name is Father William Most, and it's called Catholic Apologetics Today. Now, like I said, it's an older book, and usually older books, when they talk about apologetics today, it's kind of dated. But it's filled with, each chapter is filled with stuff that is still relevant and I still use a lot today. His appendices in the book are very, very useful. We'll try to, I know I threw a lot of book titles at you. We'll see if we can post this at virginmostpowerfulradio.org. William Most, Catholic Apologetics Today, is definitely a book that every beginner should have on their bookshelf. Definitely. Okay, so that's my book recommends. I think every beginner ought to have those books on their shelf. And, of course, you could fill out from there. And that they weren't in any particular order or anything like that. But it's all good stuff. And, hopefully I can save you some money and some time reading bad material. Okay, coming up next week, folks, I kind of teased this at the beginning. Monday, Bobby Hesley comes. Now, Bobby's not nationally known, but he is an outstanding apologist here in the Southeast Michigan area. Bobby's coming to the JoJo to talk about one area that he does an outstanding job on, Mary is Ever Virgin. So you don't want to miss that. Bobby takes that issue in a way that I've never heard it before, and it's very powerful. Wednesday, Matt Frad from Pints of Aquinas fame. Yeah, many of you must be familiar with him. He's a very popular speaker. He's coming on to talk about his new book on a dialogue on the existence of God. So Matt Frad's coming to the dojo. Also, Friday, Teresa Tomio from EWTN, Ave Maria Radio. I'm going to have her on. We're going to talk about the media and truth and why the two don't always go together. It's going to be a lot of fun. And as always, people, you know, the Spiritual Warfare Conference down at in Covina, California at the Sacred Heart Chapel, February 11th and so on. It's coming up soon. So I don't know if there's any seats available, but I mean, just looking at the roster of speakers, I imagine it's going to be packed. So if you haven't got tickets to it, you want to get Spiritual Warfare Conference 5 and be there or be square. All right, gang, it's time to turn off the lights at the dojo, shut down the Midwest Command Center here. It's been a lot of fun. It was a good show. Coming up next, the dynamic duo of talk radio. Terry and Jesse show is coming up. And so get ready for high-intensity talk radio. And as always, I wish everybody have a wonderful, blessed day and a blessed weekend as well. And I'll see about getting that list up on the website. All right? Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.